not visualizing it this way.
No, we were not. That's not the vision.
It's been about 20 minutes trying to get this thing to work. Updates. All right, yo, everybody. Here we are. Another episode of the Mind Body Marathon. We're back in studio this week and got old Dr. Jared on with us. This show is going to be about visualization and kind of an interesting topic with regards to performance and understanding visualization with performance and the need for it. And quite honestly, the underutilization of it.
Yeah.
You know, we all, I think the sexy thing in training is to, with running and training is to, you know, work hard and sweat and grind and all that sort of thing. But, you know, you need to visualize, you need to sort of understand the mind is really, you know, Paavo Nurmi in the 1920s said it best. He said, you know, his mind is everything. His muscles are pieces of rubber. All that he is because of his mind.
Ah.
And it's quite literally the case. Like your muscles are actually just pieces of rubber. You know, David Goggins right now talks about like we're all operating at about 40% when we think we're going all out.
It's crazy.
Which, you know, might be a little bit of a nervous statement, but I think the sentiment is there. Yeah. So did you ever utilize visualization in your training?
I did. Yeah.
And why? Why did you start to integrate it?
So, I mean, the why was, you know, to improve performance. I think that at Walsh, especially before like the championship season, before like the regional meet, you know, where there's a lot riding on that performance there, that coach would always have us do, you know, at least a week of just visualizing the race and recalling, you know, what has worked well in the past. And that prepares you mentally. And especially if you've been there before, like if you've run that course before in years past, to, you know, bring that familiarity back. And yeah, I mean, when I used it, it worked. It, you know, when I ran, I think it was regionals my junior year, I think that would have been 2019. Yeah, like in the race, I pictured myself moving up in the second half and, you know, really trying to pick off people and, you know, who went out too hard. And, you know, recalling previous performances that primed my body to be able to get the best out of it when I needed it. So,
yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you know, I think in a weird way, you know, Emil Zatopek said that runners must run with dreams in their heart. And, you know, you mentioned something there that was interesting. You kind of said, you know, you guys would start doing that within a week of the race. And one of the things I realized my freshman year heading into Malone is that I got into the habit in my senior year in high school to like just basically just dream crazy things on runs. I would almost act like a commentator.
Wow.
Where I would be like, you know, like some famous Olympic race or something like that. And I would be like, oh my God, like, you know, here we are coming into the third lap and then they're on world record pace. And you kind of just like keep, like, you're just getting this like random narrative of you running against these like fake names. And, and I would always do that. And I started really doing that my senior year in high school, which was honestly a really big breakout year. And then I just kept it up. I preferred to train alone. I would do workouts with the team, obviously, but on my easy runs, I preferred to train alone. And I would just literally just run and just dream up some crazy thoughts of like, you know, winning nationals and, you know, making the Olympic team and just doing stuff like that. And and then all of the, not even like what it would feel like to do it, but all of the crazy scenarios around it, like meaning like, like how would the race unfold? You know, how it would feel, how it would smell. I mean, the very details of it. I mean, there's nonstop research about, you just have to know the details of, not know, but you have to sort of think about those things and to get the most effective visualization.
Exactly. And that's what the research supports too, is, you know, remembering, you know, either remembering a previous performance, breakout performance, in, it's very critical to recall in extreme detail, like, how did the track feel? How did your spikes feel? Like, how did it, you know, how did it feel to put on, you know, your shoe? What shoe did you put on first? Like, little things like that, you know, that you can bring back into your mind, and that familiarity. And, you know, you don't have to remember just, you know, passively. Like, you can be doing this while you're outperforming. Like, you know, visualization kind of gets this air that it's, you know, it's done in a dark room and, you know, before bed. And, you know, that's one form, but, you know, active visualization when you're actually competing, you know, and I think in your book, you mentioned, you know, at the end of a race, like, imagine you have, you know, helium balloons tied to your feet.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's a cue that you can visualize, and that'll translate into your running form.
Yeah. Yeah. So I often think of the story of, like, Russell Wilson, and he would basically run around a mall, and when he was a kid, and he would try to avoid people, and that basically turned into him learning how to escape defenders.
Oh, wow.
And he was playing what eventually would be his reality.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I thought of visualization, is like, yeah, I would get, anytime I would get specific about the race, like, that would help, but I feel like sometimes then you almost clench, you almost dwell. But if you run a race 1,000 times in your head, meaning you just practice all the scenarios, like, the race goes out too hard, how do you respond? The race goes out too slow, how do you respond? How do you respond to canyon surges? How do you respond to, you know, extreme uphills? How do you respond to extreme downhills? How do you respond to all these different scenarios? And then if you let that play out in your mind, your mind really doesn't know the difference between reality and dream.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so it's sort of just like, okay, so now we've just ran 1,000 races.
Yeah.
You know, more than you've actually run. Because if you work on this, on all your easy runs for a couple of years, that's like 1,000 races. And so that's 1,000 more races than somebody's just going out listening to music and just bopping along and just, like, watching the birds and not really, like, focusing on, like, the strategy at hand in terms of trying to improve the actual mental side of performance.
Yeah. Like, Michael Phelps is very famous for being, like, the poster child for visualization before big races. And, like, even in that level, like, countless hours in a pool, you know, countless hours of training, and he still relies on that visualization to, you know, prepare for every single possibility. That's actually what his coach recommended to do. And one of the scenarios was, well, what happens if your goggles fill up with water? And, like, that actually happened in one of his gold medal races. So, you know, well, what happens if you're, you know, 4 miles deep in a 10K and your spike comes untied? What do you do?
Like, yeah.
You know, are you going to let that fluster you? You know, it's a big meet, it's a conference, it's nationals, whatever. Like, how are you going to respond to that? Mm-hmm. You can't just stop. You can't just stop off the track, tie the shoe. Like, you got to keep going.
But part of that process is, it's accepting, like, you're out of that woe is me mindset.
Right.
You're into the strategy and action, right? You know, if you get in a car accident, you just respond.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you have to do to make sure you're okay? You know, if you're in a super stressful environment, like a race, and then something bad happens, like, you just have to preemptively work through those scenarios so that way you're not panicking the day of.
Right.
And also, you go in much more confident because you've thought through those things.
Yeah.
You know, you're not dwelling on them, like, what if this happens? But you're more just like, I know how to react accordingly. And I think that's really critical. One of the ways that I sort of think of, like, visualization as well with regards to, like, putting your imprint on a race is that, you know, say there's 20 people towing the line to run an all-out mile. You know, in my mind, that mile, figuratively speaking, is like an abandoned building in the middle of a bustling downtown. Somebody's going to come in with a vision and turn that building into something profitable.
Yeah.
But that building will literally stay abandoned until one person comes in with a vision and changes that building. So they stake their, you know, they put their imprint on that building. A race is just, it's a blank slate. And somebody's going to dictate that race.
Yeah.
Somebody, it might as well be you. It might as well, you be the one to, you know, understand where you're at, you know, put yourself in that position. I was just talking with a really high level miler yesterday, and they were talking about being at a pretty high level meet. You know, there's a bunch of really high end professional runners in the race, and they were just afraid. But in the end, they went and ranked 12th, and they finished 8th. And it's like, what if you just went in and just like hung on the shoulders of the leaders? You're basically running the same pace.
Yeah.
But you're not doing that because you're scared of their name. And you're not putting your imprint on the race and you're reacting to the race. You're defensive. You're not offensive. And you're not laying your vision into the race. You're sort of reacting to their existence.
Exactly.
They're putting their reality onto the race and you're just in their world. So yeah. Why not put your reality into the race, your reality to make that abandoned building what you want it to be? And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But at least you went into the race with intent.
Exactly. I think, you know, the power of what if, you know, to dream that you can, like, you know, it sounds cheesy, but, you know, the champions, the world's best in anything, you know, be it businessman, you know, be it, you know, even chiropractic, like using that powerful tool to put yourself in that championship, like put yourself in the best light that you can, you know? And I think one of the things that holds people back is just, they just don't dream big enough. They're just like, well, you know, my training is ho-hum and I don't know, maybe if things go right and, you know, I've bicarbed and got all my, my hacks in line that it's going to pay off. But, you know, what if I'm in the lead pack with a lap to go? What if it's me and another one in with 200 meters? Like, what are you going to do in that scenario? If you've never played that out in your head, you know, you have to put yourself in that, that headspace first so that when it actually happens, you're ready to, you know, you're ready to perform.
Yeah. So two things, like one, we need to talk about emotions, but first it's like, if you talk to like a lot of, you know, performance, high-end performances, whether it be, you know, acting or singing or dancing or sports, you know, like I remember I was watching Trae Young in the NBA in the middle of the season. They had this like a little NBA cup thing and he beat the New York Knicks on the last second shot. And then he had this very specific dance that he did after he had that shot. And then the reporter asked him, was like, oh, when did you come up with that dance? He was like, oh, I came up with it like 2 days ago when I knew I would hit this shot to win the game.
Wow.
And he just said it like blank faced, like, yeah, I already thought about this. This is going to happen.
Wow.
And he was like, just sort of like, okay, move on. Like sort of thing is like, this is, I had previously thought about this. Like I planned this dance. Like this is just how I saw the game going.
Yeah.
So he was 0% shocked by it. He was the only person in the arena not shocked by what happened.
I think, you know, we look at visualization as being like a black and white thing, like, you know, certain just, you know, well, how does it feel? How does it, you know, but our emotional cortex isn't being activated during that experience. It's just, you know, you cross the finish line, then what, you know, are you going to celebrate? Are you going to pump your fist? Are you going to be like, yeah, I did it. Or are you just like, meh, you know?
Right. Well, emotion is interesting too, because when you tie in emotions to performance, you know, that's sort of where you can get the moms that lift cars off babies and crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that's how we get to that next level. And that was one of the things that I always really, when I took a couple years off of running from 2008 to 2010, when I got back into running, I was just randomly in this run in the late 2009. And it was just some easy little 2 mile, 3 mile, because I was just getting back into training. And I had this thought, I was like, oh my God, it would be so cool if my family saw me on TV at the Olympic trials.
Wow.
Like it just popped in my head. And I was like, and I got like chills. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm training for the trials. You know, and it just was like that from that point on, like it was like everything's buttoned up, everything's to this one goal. And then that feeling, that goosebumps that I had, just that of that vision that just randomly popped in my head, that carried me through all the long marathon workouts, all the hard tempo runs, all the grueling, all the setbacks, all the, you know, the moments when you didn't want to wake up early to do core or lift, or all the moments where you questioned your ability. I just would kind of revert back to that emotion of that feeling. And, you know, when you see something come into fruition and you've dwelled on it for that long, like it's pretty impressive. And for 2 years, I was basically weaving into my subconscious, like that I was going to handle 5:20 pace for a marathon, like 5:15, 5:20 pace. And I couldn't even like sabotage myself in the race, you know, like when it actually came down to the point of like qualifying, because I had woven it so deeply in my subconscious.
Yeah. I mean, when you program your brain to perform like that, then that's what's going to happen. Like, you know, it's garbage in, garbage out, good in, good out. Like, if you just keep feeding your mind, eventually you believe that, and that becomes your output then. And I think, you know, like you said, you know, if we visualize ourselves in a positive light repeatedly, then that's going to be our output eventually in performance. Like, it might not be today, but, you know, down the line, down into the future. Like, that's why positivity is so huge and critical, that you know, you have a setback in a workout, you have to sandbag it or something. Like,
well, that's the
then what?
That's my point on the shot with Trae Young. It's like you're confident before the shot. You're not confident because you made the shot.
Exactly.
So you're positive and you're confident before you even toe the line. You're not confident because you ran a time. Like, confidence doesn't come from performance. Performance comes from confidence. You have to be confident before you toe the line.
Exactly.
And part of that confidence is, like, it's the reason why we dream bad dreams, where our brain is scared of uncomfortable circumstances. So you're trying to wrestle with these uncomfortable things. So if you rehearse and you visualize and you sort of think about the mental side of it, then the brain is not scared to perform. And so when you toe the line, it's actually like you're going to get ride a roller coaster, and it's not so concerned anymore. It's not so worried because it has adequately prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and even from like a setback perspective, like if you have a bad long run, or, you know, that day you're just off, it's like you can fall back on that vision that you're still chasing after. And, you know, I think a quote that works really well in that scenario is, you know, vision without action is useless and pointless, and also action without vision is also meaningless and pointless. So it's like, you know, you can't have one without the other. And, you know, if you have this great big vision but don't act on it, then, well, you're not getting anywhere. But if, you know, you have all the action, you're actionable, you're moving like crazy, but you don't have that vision of success, well, you're not good. That's also futile. And so,
you know, I was talking with a patient earlier, and they were talking about their husband who is really good at like tinkering with things and likes to, like, you know, take apart things and put it back together and like fix all these random things around the house. And to me, I hate that idea. Like, that would be my misery. But to him, he actually goes out of his way to take apart the hot water tank and put it back together and figure it all out. Like, that sounds terrible to me. So he's actually actively searching for problems, and I'm in my daily existence actively running away from problems. So of course, if the hot water tank goes out, I panic and he doesn't. So, you know, if you think about performance, that's kind of what you want to be. You want to be the tinker. Like, if you roll your ankle, it's not a big deal. It's just another problem. It's like, yeah, you just got to figure it out. Like, don't worry, don't panic. You know, you're just maybe a little bit setback, maybe a little downtime, but figure out the right exercises, figure out the right rehab, figure out how to get better back as quick as possible. But don't panic, because it's a problem that it's just literally it's like a little thing you need to tinker with. If, like you said, if you had a bad workout, a bad long run, don't panic. Like, you can just adapt, figure out why, make improvements, talk it over with your coach, and then, you know, moving forward, it's going to be a much better reaction.
Yeah. So this is really interesting, and I wanted to share this one. So in 2014, there was a study that showed that imagining strength training of immobilized limbs preserved up to 24% more strength with having that visualization than with no mental training at all.
Huh.
So even in scenarios where, you know, you're recovering, you're resting, the motor cortex is still active. And actually, you know, people who you know are immobilized or in a cast, like keeping, you know, that same sport, you know, if you're watching your stride in your mind, you're going to preserve more strength than if you did not do that. Well, I think that's crazy.
It's absolutely wild. What's also super cool is that there are some studies that show that if golfers visualize their swing, they actually do better than practicing on their swing.
What? Oh my gosh.
Like, because a lot of times, like, you know, when you actively practice, like, I'm not saying you should obviously just only rely on visualization, but to some golfers that are missing sort of a free flow side of it, maybe they're too technical, too in their heads, it could actually be more beneficial for them to not actually think about the technique.
Huh.
In terms of, or not actually practice the technique, but more think about it and rehearse it and let the brain sort of organize the movement pattern of it and the feeling of the success. Because I think part of the reason why this works is the brain is goal oriented. You know, if you say to it, you go, hey, I want to do this thing today. It goes, okay. And it just sort of figures out a way how to do it. So if you're visualizing success, I'm visualizing a hole in one, then it works backwards. But if you're on the tee, you're not thinking about the hole in one. You're thinking about, okay, my hips should swing. I should keep my shoulders down. You're looking at it the wrong direction. And so when you're in performance, you don't look at the technical side of it. You have to look at the large picture and the end goal. Yes. And then that's what frees up the flow of the brain. The brain gets hung up on details. And so you got to just let it do what's worked into its subconscious. And then I think when you think of it that way, just kind of reversing the goal, then, you know, some people go out there, they think about races. They're like, oh, I'm going to go out in like whatever time and I'm going to hold on. And it's like, sure, fine. I mean, I think that's okay to have sort of a general idea, but I think like that's also probably stealing the joy of the race, because what if the race doesn't go out that way?
Exactly.
Like then all of a sudden you need to react. And you know, if you've never thought about that, if you're never actually prepared for all of these random scenarios that could be thrown at you, then sorry, you know, you're living somebody else's race.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, that what you spoke on, I think is that confirmation bias where you can, you know, the brain will confirm things if you train it to. So, it, you know, like you said, you're on the tee box or, you know, you're warming up and, you know, you either find things that will show you that you're going to perform well, or you'll find things that, oh, I feel like I, you know, I'm fatigued. I have this going on in my ankle. I, you know, my shoulder feels whatever. The warm up, you know, that just spirals down. And, you know, versus saying, well, you know, this is a good time to perform. The weather's, you know, whatever the case might be. Like, you know, I felt snappy on my warm up, like, you know.
Yeah, good or bad.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're on your warm up, you're like, man, I feel great. Well, pride comes before a fall, man. It's like, don't let your highs get too high, your lows get too low. I always kind of thought of like almost like Batman and Superman in a weird way, where once the race goes off, it's like I'm a different person. Like, meaning like reality sort of shuts off and now I'm executing. And what I think about that is like, it's like that way I'm not drawing any judgments about how I'm feeling or anything. And it's sort of like if you're in a fight, if somebody just comes up to you and just punches you right in the face and now you're actively engaged in a fight, you're not thinking about what you had for breakfast.
Exactly.
You're not thinking about whether or not, you know, there's a hill at mile two.
Yeah.
You're not thinking about these. None of these things matter to you at that point. You are just in a fight and you're mano a mano, and it's just a singular thing. And that's what a race should be. It should just be like a singular thing, where when it happens, you just unlock and go. And I always thought that I would race the best the moments when I'm laughing on the line. Like I always kind of had a mantra of that. If I'm not laughing on the line, I'm taking it too serious. I'm thinking too much about it. But there's a photo of me right before the Olympic trials where I'm like laughing with Meb Keflezighi because we were both K's and we were right next to each other in terms of how they brought us out. And it's like, I knew I was going to have a good race that day because I was just so chill.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, but then when the race goes off, like somebody punched me in the face, let's go. It's time to go. Like it, like you just kind of like turn into that performance mode.
Yeah.
And then the brain goes flat and then it's just like execute and react.
Boom. Yeah. So here's a question. Do you visualize yourself in first person or third person?
I usually visualize myself in third person.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then every now and again, I'll go back and forth. But like when I was doing a lot of this in high school, it would always be third person.
Okay.
And then because I felt inspired by people that were watching me and people that like wanted to see me do well. So I felt good about that. And I wanted to kind of feed off of their emotions.
Okay.
So I think that's why I was doing that. But the older I got, it definitely became more first person. And then understanding like my own internal networks that might have been selling me a little bit and selling my performance short, but just trying to master the internal chemistry so that I could perform at a high level.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think if you've, you know, look at yourself from a third person. It's like you're watching yourself on TV.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, you know, he's running well now. Like he's, you know, going to the arms, he's finishing, he's kicking, you know, whatever the case may be in the race. But I think from a first person perspective, you can really feel the internal, mm-hmm. you know, you can feel the breathing, you can feel the track or the road or the trail. You know, you can feel your arms swinging, you can feel the wind in the, you know, in the hair and whatnot. But like, I would probably side with first person because you get that tactile sense. And the more senses you can bring into it, you know, smells and tastes, whatever, that ties more of the senses together
yeah.
and makes more of that emotional connection.
Now that I, you know, because like we've hit on kind of quite a bit of topics here, but now that I'm thinking about it, like, I guess what I ultimately do, even now that I'm not really like training all that much, but I still race, what I do is I visualize more of the routine around the race. And then I visualize the end of the race, like kind of like what I expect to happen at the end. But when I'm on my runs, I more visualize the actual internal mechanics of the race.
Okay.
And I feel like that separation. So I guess the reason why I do this is sort of like, now that I've kind of have sort of thinking about it a little bit more clearly, it's like, like details and timing and itinerary sort of stress me out.
Okay.
And so like, oh, how do I get to the start line? Like, where do I put my bag? And, you know, what am I going to bring in my bag? And like, what am I going to eat? When am I going to wake up? Like all that sort of stuff. So I consistently rehearse that and I'll visualize like, getting the start line chill, getting that everything's going to go smooth. Everything's going to be chill. You know, the warm up's going to go great. Like I kind of visualize the nuts and bolts of that. But then when I'm on my runs, in terms of like just laying in bed and just chilling.
Yeah.
But when I'm on my run, and I might only really do that, like you said, like kind of a week out or something like that. Mm-hmm. But when I'm on my run, then I'll visualize like all sorts of random situations, including a direct situation associated with that race. But a lot of it would just be sort of playing in my head, like, you know, play racing, if you will.
Yeah.
And then that's where we kind of tie into that, like, you know, thousand race sort of conversation that we had. But I kind of feel like you should almost do that on every easy run. I don't think you should really do a ton of it personally on workouts, long runs for sure, easy runs, maybe tempos, but not when you're like hammering, because then you just got, it's yeah. kind of the same thing as racing. You just sort of have to shut off the mind and just kind of let it do its thing, because it's a very difficult, stressful scenario. So when you race, you're not actively visualizing. And when you're doing like hard and repeats, probably not smart to do that. But I think tempo run all the way up to easy runs, like definitely integrate it.
Yeah. You know, there's two times of the day, I think, where the brain is most, so like you have more access to your subconscious, and that would be right before you go to bed and right when you wake up. Those are the two times of the day where you're most, you can tap into your subconscious a little bit deeper. And, you know, like when I was in grad school, like studying right before bed, then, you know, have a morning exam, like I was able to remember the stuff that I would study right before bedtime. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if we're going to visualize, it would be best to do it right before bed. So you have that programming into that subconscious right yeah. before bed.
That's awesome.
And, you know, right before you wake up is, well, right when you wake up, you know, within 20 minutes or so. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Any other final points you want to, I mean, this is obviously a very broad topic and it kind of gave a lot of our personal experience on it, but also some actionable items. Yeah, as we're kind of rounding third.
Yeah, that, you know, research supports that the more you do it, the easier it becomes and the better performances come after a long period. I think there was one study in 2025, 3 times a week for about 100 days is what they found is the strongest effect. So
that's cool. And, yeah, then it just becomes kind of a habit.
Right.
You know,
90 days.
I mean, sometimes you want to go out for an easy run and you just want to like think about nothing or think about like whatever problem you're dealing with or whatever. But if you are actively training for a large race, you know, a big event coming up, especially if you're performing at a really high level or you're trying to, you know, reach a goal that you're a little afraid of, then just conquer the brain. Can't, you know, you're better off spending more time doing this and running 10, 20 less miles a week. Honestly, like there's just, I can't say enough about it. Like so many times I go into, I think back on my career and some of the better races that I've had, I kind of was underprepared and, but I was in good mental state and I was able to take, you know, take advantage of my body feeling pretty good that day and just execute, not sell myself short based on where I was at my training cycle or how fit I was or how fit I thought I was. You know, but I think you, just like I go back to the alley fight conversation, it's like, you know, when you get into a fight, like you're not thinking about like how much training you've put into that fight. You're just trying to survive. So that's the way racing should be. You shouldn't be thinking, oh, I've only done 20 miles a week for this many. No, you're just out here racing. You're just executing. So don't let that stuff get in your head. Like just, you know, kind of, and visualization sort of helps you conquer those demons.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people's conceptions might be that it's this big cerebral thing that, you know, it's like the X-Men with Cerebrum, you know, that you're like in the environment, like you can see three-dimensionally in your mind. It's like microdosing. I think microdosing visualization, like whatever the case might be, you can apply it to racing. You can apply it to life. You can apply it to literally everything you do. And, you know, what does that look like? You know, what does success look like in those scenarios? You know, like before a patient encounter, like I'll visualize a successful treatment and well, that helps.
Yeah.
And, you know, in those instances, those patients get better. Like
that's awesome.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, cause running is just a tool for life essentially. So,
yeah,
you know, these are mechanisms to help you run faster, but you're right. You know, utilizing exactly. it for work, utilizing it for, you know, say you got to do a presentation or say you got to like have a hard conversation with a child or your spouse and you visualize it going a certain way and you saying certain things and you not overreacting or reacting the correct way, then that'll help you execute those scenarios better.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Thanks everybody for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail: Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries. So again, Running Rehab.